one of the biggest things I see, especially in young men, and I bet leaders listening to this in our churches, a lot of times they don't have a playbook for manhood. When they don't have a playbook to call, they end up applying all of their energy towards putting out the most recent fire, as opposed to applying that energy towards spiritual and character and relational growth. And so this is a recipe for remaining stagnant in life, is put all your energy towards putting out fires and don't grow.
Welcome to the Lead Like Jesus podcast. This is Karen Conley, and we are so glad to be in studio today. I'm here with my husband, Chris Conley, who is a trustee for the Lead Like Jesus organization. Chris, we have just such an incredible opportunity to learn from a terrific leader who has made an impact and has an opportunity to make an incredible impact across this country. Introduce our guest for today.
We've got Evan Owens, and you are going to absolutely gain so much insight from Evan. He is the executive director of Reboot Combat Recovery. And you might be thinking, well, I'm not sure that I've got recovery issues. You're fooled. You're deceived. We all have recovery issues. Here's the way I like to think about it. In recovery, you talk about your drug of choice. We all have our sin of choice. We all have our vice of choice. We all have all kind of issues. So listen up. We are going to learn so much together, but we're also going to learn from Evan, from his professional background before Reboot, in his tech experience and leading a very successful company. We've got lots in store for you today. Evan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
As we come and bring this opportunity for leaders to learn from other leaders, we always like to know, what was the story behind the story? Before you had your success, before even your world within the tech companies, and then to Reboot, give our audience a little bit of your beginnings and who Evan Owens is.
Happy to share, and hopefully I can share something of value. Growing up in general, I think a lot of times leadership is something that is sort of built into you from time when you're little. I think that I was raised to believe that I was supposed to lead and that leadership was in me and that God had given me leadership characteristics. And so kind of anything I would always find myself involved in, I'd look for a need and try to step up and fill that. And I remember after a kind of a strange career in the music industry as a songwriter and then moving into the tech world, I actually entered the tech world in a sales position. And if you would have told me that I was a salesperson, I would have laughed at you because that's not what I ever envisioned myself doing. And then it was amazing to see how just showing up every day, working hard, created opportunities to where eventually I was able to become CEO of this pretty successful, large technology agency. It's one of those stories where you think about right after they'd caught all the fish, Jesus says, okay, now leave all those fish and come follow me. It's like the day when they maybe had the biggest success is the day he called them away from that. And I think that's kind of what my story ends up like, is I finally became CEO. I finally have all this kind of worldly success. I'm finally making good money. All this happens. And the guy's like, cool, I'm going to present this ministry opportunity to you. And now you're going to have to leave it. That's really terrible in the moment. That's really hard and really sort of challenging. And so that's kind of the story of how God's brought me into leadership and doing what I do now with a nonprofit instead of a for-profit company.
Evan, when I hear you talk about that, it reminds me of Bob Buford and one of his classic lines of moving from success to significance. But you really had that choice not at the halftime of your life. You know, you had that choice much earlier in your life. And what were the things that once you've had the success and you're experiencing all the things that come with success, what were the things that began to make you think about doing things that are more recovery oriented or more ministry oriented and doing those things that are those investments in people's lives on a personal level?
Yeah, I think to talk about that, I'd also have to talk about my wife, because she has always been sort of a spiritual anchor for me in a lot of ways. And it was actually through her that I first got involved with the military. My dad's a Vietnam veteran, but I'm not a veteran, much less a combat veteran. Continued to go work on Fort Campbell, working in the traumatic brain injury clinic, which those of you listening, traumatic brain injury is sort of the signature wound of this particular war that we've been in for about 15 years now. All of a sudden, we moved to an all-military town. Here I am. I'm the civilian in the neighborhood. And what gave it away was I was the one that drove the sedan. Everybody else had Jeeps and trucks, but here I come in my little Nissan Altima.
It wasn't the haircut?
Yeah, I was going to say, and the longer hair. And they leave for work in the morning at like 4:30. I was rolling out at like 7:30, right? So,
yeah.
You know, and so here I am getting to know all these military people. And it was really interesting. During the day, you know, I'm leading predominantly millennials or younger employees. you think about managing a company like that, most developers and designers and creatives, they are very much sort of trust is earned after relationships are formed. That's when respect is earned. Typically, they're going to switch jobs every 3 to 5 years, so they're not thinking career in terms of one job, one place for 20 years and retire. Typically, they are sort of a mindset of culture trumps everything else. I want a place where I can have fun and fit in, that kind of stuff. Versus now in the evenings, my wife and I are growing this nonprofit on the side. It's really fascinating. I find myself in a totally different leadership culture, military culture of respect is given based on positional authority, and then relationship is built after that. Or people in the military, they are one career for 20 plus years to retirement. That's the way they're built and wired. You think about in my tech agency world, most people would not believe in absolute anything, you know, absolutes. But in the military, there's lots of absolutes because people's lives depend on it. And so all of a sudden, I find myself in this really interesting sort of bicultural thing that I'm experiencing. And one of the things I started to see over and over again was the people that I built relationships with, they were getting mental health counseling. They were taking medications. Many of them were going to therapists. But over and over again, these spiritual themes kept coming up, these questions around when this happened to my friend, where was God? If God is good, then how come these things exist? What do I do about this guilt that I feel, even though I know I didn't do anything wrong? What do I do now that I'm wounded? And I used to be this hotshot leader in the military, and now I'm being told I'm being medically boarded out of the military, and I don't know who I am outside of my rank. And these are spiritual questions. And as I started to see these issues, it was really, really fascinating. It was almost as if they were fighting an enemy that was unseen, which a lot of times post-traumatic stress disorder is called that. But in my eyes, they were fighting an unseen enemy. The problem was they couldn't put a name to him. They didn't know who they were fighting. So I started realizing maybe, just maybe, if my wife and I could give them the tools to be able, in the life skills, to fight against this unseen enemy, the spiritual enemy, maybe they could win. And that was really the origin of our ministry and the origin of the nonprofit of Reboot, was inviting people into our home, giving them a meal, getting to build relationship, community, instilling some life skills and characteristics in them, and then releasing them back into leadership to lead other people from their own community. And that was kind of where God birthed Reboot from in our living room about 7 years ago.
Evan, it's such a strong visual picture to say that people are fighting this unseen enemy. And that's such a great description of, in many ways, the way that the enemy does deceive us. His weapons and his assault toward us is so frequently unseen, but yet felt so strongly, and works through so many other components that we wouldn't necessarily identify as that's from the enemy. So when you are helping people through this, what are maybe the most common topics, most common issues that you're dealing with that would fall into this category of the way this unseen enemy is attacking people?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that, because I think this is something that, let's take military out of it. Let's just talk about the fact that we live in a world that's becoming increasingly traumatized. When you think about the mental health of our nation, specifically in America, 2 out of 10 adults now take an antidepressant. Nearly 3 out of 10 take an anti-anxiety medication. So the reality is that mental health has taken us about as far as it can, and yet we're still experiencing increasing mental health instability and strife. And I think that we've watched church leaders, if there's church leaders listening, we've watched this movement take place over the past 20 years as well. That sounds more like mental health. Let's refer to it an expert. Let's refer to a PhD, a counselor, which I am a passionate and big-time advocate of mental health counselors and doctors of counseling and therapy, things of that nature, psychiatrists, big, big supporters of them because we need them. But I think the church and us as leaders, we have to stop outsourcing what I believe is also a spiritual issue into a mental health realm. I believe that we're made up of mind, body, and soul. And many of the things that now as culture we're labeling mental health, I believe are actually spiritual health. And we as a church need to start having a voice in the area of mental health again, or else we're going to find ourselves on the outskirts of every issue of where people are broken and hurting. And we're going to end up outsourcing that to PhDs who don't necessarily profess to know Jesus or even teach his truth. And this is a dangerous thing for us as a culture. But it's also a huge opportunity, because this means that everywhere we look, people are traumatized. You know, it says that the world has been groaning, as in the pains of childbirth. That's trauma. It's been hurting since that. So when we talk about what are the main issues, these are not military specific, although I might speak about them through a military specific lens, if that's okay, because that's the world I live in. They're not military specific. Some of the biggest ones that I'll talk about, when you look at family of origin, This means, how did your upbringing shape you? All of us were shaped by our past. And I would say that if you look at data around people who experience some level of trauma at a young age, under 18, they're infinitely more likely to be traumatized again by an act of another person. So that means that they're vulnerable. And one of the things that you mentioned about the enemy and how crafty he is, I have become more and more and more, I don't want to say amazed, but just at least aware of the fact that many times the enemy's schemes in our lives, even as leaders, start when we're 2 and 3 and 4 years old, and they don't pan out till we're 25 or 30 years old. I mean, he's a patient enemy. He'll plan the whole time for a big attack, and we don't think about it that way. We think more of a day-to-day struggle. But one of the biggest things I see, especially in young men, and I bet leaders listening to this in our churches, a lot of times they don't have a playbook for manhood. When they don't have a playbook to call, they end up applying all of their energy towards putting out the most recent fire, as opposed to applying that energy towards spiritual and character and relational growth. And so this is a recipe for remaining stagnant in life, is put all your energy towards putting out fires and don't grow. And this is the number one thing that I see, is a lot of times people exist in this zone of drama. They exist in the zone of being traumatized and causing trauma to others. And one of the things that I really focus on is, what are those life skills that I can give them to make them recognize that cycle and break out of that?
Before you give us some of the other topics that you address, what you described in your own personal journey of, I was born in a home where leadership was kind of expected, right, and built into me. There's some other leaders that will have that same journey. But there's something obviously in your story regarding your faith that when you came juxtaposed to the success that you were having in the technology firm and you were seeing so much progress, I was looking at your resume and the amount of success that you had at CenterSource, was the interactive agency that you were CEO of. Not everybody has that amount of success. And then, wow, they're introduced to a ministry and they're seeing some things happen. There's something obviously about your journey that, from a faith perspective, allowed you to see and be open to that change. Tell us a little bit about how that faith component helped you to discern this was maybe the next step for you as a leader.
Well, this is going to ruffle some feathers, perhaps, but that's okay. That's the business I'm in, I suppose, is ruffling feathers. But one of the questions that annoyed me the most, that continues to annoy me when we talk about mission, how does that scale? How does your program scale? And everybody wants to talk about scalability. That's a big buzzword among, you know, businesses and nonprofits. And scalability is important. I get that. That's important. But you think about Jesus, all of his stories, for the most part, were interactions one-on-one with people or one-on-two with people. And most of his time was invested in 12 people. So I wonder how many people would have looked at Jesus and said, well, how does your ministry scale? I mean, how do you build a program, Jesus, where we have 7,000 people go through it day in and day out, working with you as their senior pastor or as their leader? That's what they would have asked. And you think about this, for us, this is the motto that I've really adopted, and I think it's scriptural. And this is something that I feel like was revealed to me as I studied the life of Jesus, was help one, then help many. Figure out that one person in your life who's hurting in one way or two ways, and just focus all of your effort on that one person. Don't build a program. Don't build a program. Don't build a ministry. Don't build a nonprofit. Don't build a business. Just help that one person. And as you help that one person, what will start to happen is a model of how to help more people like them will emerge, and it'll be the craziest thing. People just like that person you're helping will start to be drawn to you, as opposed to you having to recruit them. I've seen it happen now time and time again with people I've coached and mentored. They find one person they want to help, whatever the issue is, and it's like a magnetic thing starts happening where God starts sending them more and more people in that classification of brokenness.
Evan, I can affirm that time and time again. Oftentimes, when I see God use someone in a significant way, it always goes back to this one person that it began with, that God used them to really make a difference in this one individual, and that inspired them in such a way, and it created faith, and it created this vision and this hunger to then see the impact of that one be impact in many. So I affirm that again and again in the way that I've seen business leaders become really, really effective in ministry output, in the way that I've seen other people actually called to ministry because of the power of the one.
Wow. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, Evan, in your story, you referred to your wife is here at Fort Campbell. You're interacting in a military community. As Chris referenced, I have military all over my background. I'm a Navy brat. My dad was a naval aviator for 24 years. My grandparents, one was a Marine, one was also in the Navy. I can imagine you as a civilian moving into an air station or a naval base or whatever type of military housing that you are in. Is there a particular person or a particular first group of people that in your mind was that defining moment where you saw God using you and your wife to help one?
Yes, there were two guys named Matt. They started coming over to our house, and I still stay in touch with both of them, which is amazing. And it was the craziest thing. One of them brought us a book, and he said, hey, you should read this. And as we're reading the book, it was like God was just calling us, drawing us more and more into it. And, you know, it's amazing to look. One of them is still struggling. One of the Matts, he still struggles every day. The other Matt just graduated pre-law. He's going on to get his law degree. His marriage is back together. And you see the difference. But both of them grew up really similarly. You look at what was the difference, and I think just God's grace and dedication and their ability to resist sin and other things, including health, factored into that. But those two guys, without them and without my wife, I mean, this call would certainly never happen in any way.
So you talked a little bit about family of origin being one of the topics. What are the other things that you have found in the reboot ministry are essential so that you can help these military veterans recover?
A big topic is false guilt versus conviction. A lot of times they're doing time for a crime they didn't commit. You know, I'm downrange. I make a decision in a moment to do something, and now I live with guilt. The fact of the matter is I followed my exact orders to a T. I did what I was supposed to do. So that's a big topic we talk about. We talk about grief and how to process that. Specifically, a lot of times the way that we cope with loss, especially as men, if you look around a military town on a Friday night, it's not unusual to see a bunch of guys sitting around a campfire on their front lawns getting drunk in honor of someone that died downrange. And I always ask them, would you be willing to die and trade places with that buddy you lost downrange? And 100% of the time, they say, absolutely. Well, let's pretend that person just walked into the room and they see the way their death is impacting your life today. What would they tell you? And almost every time, it's your life is not honoring me in the way you're living. If you want to honor me, don't just say you die for me. I want you to live for me. I want you to do something to make more of yourself. That's a topic we talk about. We also talk about identity a fair amount, the idea that you are not what you do. You are something more than your career. Your best days are not behind you, that God has more for you. God still has a leader in you despite your injury or despite your career being over, that there's still leadership in you. And the last topic, the one that I'd say the biggest one is the topic of forgiveness. And not forgiveness from Jesus to us, but actually forgiveness in terms of sort of the root of bitterness that Paul talks about, this idea that by forgiving others and forgiving myself, specifically others, I'm setting myself free. There's so much anger in our veteran population. And one of the biggest spiritual roots of that is an unwillingness to forgive those who have either hurt us, could be the enemy, could be chain of command, could be somebody who made a bad decision to hurt my friend, could be myself. But we need to forgive. And as we forgive, it actually frees us. That's one of the biggest breakthrough weeks, because we have a 12-week course that people go through in Reboot.
Evan, as I listen to you, one of my observations, because the subject matter in the military is so serious and the pain can be so great with some of the things that you encounter, it's demanding conversations that require some vulnerability. It's demanding conversations to talk about some really serious topics versus just suppressing them or avoiding them. But when I hear the topics and where you're leading people, on a different level, these are universal topics that everybody wrestles with. They're just not necessarily dealing with things at that level of depth to force them to really talk about it. Do you see that a lot of these topics, now that you compare, you've got this military experience, but you also have your tech background, corporate experience, do you see that those topics, they're really transferable, but it's just the context in which they live in?
Yes, you mentioned vices or favorite sins at the beginning. One of the things that I have been humbled by, if you think of us like sponges throughout life, kind of all of us absorb these behaviors, good and bad, some vices, some good things, right? Some coping skills, we'd call them in the therapy world. All of us develop these things. And I think a lot of times trauma, if you were to dip a sponge in water, that's all that we've absorbed throughout our life up to the point that you're listening to this right now. Trauma comes along and it squeezes the sponge. And what happens is all of that stuff, good and bad, starts to flood out of us at a pace that's almost unmanageable for us in that moment. And a lot of times, especially if I've had prior trauma or if I've not had good coping skills instilled in me, all of a sudden I start turning to those things. I think of, like, what's that Roger Rabbit thing where he's falling and somebody hands him a parachute that says Acme parachute, but he actually opens it and it's an anvil,
yes,
right? And it just makes him fall faster. A lot of times the coping skills that we go to are things that we think are going to help, but they make us fall faster. And I've had these waves where I've become super critical of someone. I'm like, how could they pull that parachute? Don't they know that's an anvil? But then I look at my own life when I'm going through hard times, and a lot of times I turn to the vice. I've got my pet vices, my pet sins that I turn to thinking it's going to slow down the pain that I'm feeling. And all it does is make it worse. And it's humbled me to realize that we are all sponges that are just waiting for trauma to squeeze us a little tighter than we've been squeezed before, and out will come something that we didn't even know we were capable of.
You know, there are just some really defining statements that you've made, and you've talked about every one of us has to fight this unseen enemy. So that is true for every single person. In part two of this podcast, we'll talk about that more. And then you also had an incredible description. You said the enemy is a patient enemy. Oftentimes the wound starts early in life, as early as 3, 4, 5 years of age, but then the greatest attack will occur at 25 years of age. He's a patient enemy. But then I love kind of where you began to take us toward the end of this podcast, where you said, if you help one, then you help many. So in this second podcast, we're going to dive into some of the specific ways that every listener can take some of these principles that Evan is teaching, and we can begin to help one and make this something that's transferable. Evan, we're so excited about what you are doing and the impact you're making, and we're so grateful, especially all of us that benefit from the freedom our military men and women provide us. Thank you so much for helping them heal and helping them get healthy and helping them recover from the sacrifices that they've made for all of us to enjoy the freedoms that we have. This has been an incredible and insightful program, and I look forward to learning more from you in part two.
Evan, as we bring this podcast to the close, help us to know if somebody out there wants to either learn about Reboot Combat Recovery or to get in touch with you and learn from you, what is the best way for them to learn about your program and reach out to you?
Our website, rebootrecovery.com. They can find out how to start a group, how to get plugged into an existing group if there's someone listening who's hurting, or they can also support us there as well, rebootrecovery.com.
Thank you for listening today. If you want more information about Reboot Recovery, go to rebootrecovery.com. And for more information about leadership development training and resources, visit us at leadlikejesus.com.